The scripture reading today is Luke chapter 24, verses 13 to 35. Now on the same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem, and talking with each other about all these things that had happened. While they were talking and discussing, Jesus himself came near and went with them. But their eyes were kept from recognizing him. And he said to them, "What are you discussing with each other while you walk along?" They stood still, looking sad. Then one of them, whose name was Cleopas, answered him, "Are you the only stranger in Jerusalem who does not know the things that have taken place there in these days?" He asked them, "What things?" They replied, "The things about Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet, mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how our chief priests and leaders handed him over to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. Yes, and besides all this, it is now the third day since these things took place. Moreover, some woman of our group astounded us. They went at the tomb early this morning, and when they did not find his body there, they came back and told us that they had indeed seen a vision of angels who said that he was alive. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it was just as the women had said, but they did not see him. Then he said to them, 'Oh, how foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have declared. Was it not necessary that the Messiah should suffer these things and then enter into his glory?' Then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them the things about himself in all the scriptures. As they came near the village to which they were going, he walked ahead as if he were going on. But they urged him strongly, saying, 'Stay with us, because it is almost evening and the day is now nearly over.' So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, blessed and broke it, and gave it to them. Then their eyes were opened and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. They said to each other, 'Were not our hearts burning within us while he was talking to us on the road, while he was opening the scriptures to us?' That same hour they got up and returned to Jerusalem, and they found the 11 and their companions and gathered together. They were saying, 'The Lord has risen indeed, and he has appeared to Simon.' Then they told what had happened on the road, how he had been made known to them in the breaking of the bread." Holy wisdom, holy word.
Morning, everybody. So I managed to make it all the way through divinity school without ever having to give a sermon. First time for everything, huh? So the first thing I want to say about this scripture reading this morning is what a remarkable story this is. Here we are told that Jesus, who was not even days ago put to death by the authorities in power, has now miraculously returned, arisen, and has actually appeared to and spoken with these two travelers who are making their way to Emmaus. Isn't that some good news? However, the narrator of Luke's gospel throws us this curveball, saying that although Jesus appeared to, came near to, and went with them, their eyes were kept from recognizing him. Now, this is a curious phrase, "their eyes were kept from recognizing him." This is not the same thing as saying merely that these travelers did not recognize Jesus, a phrasing which might otherwise encourage us to place these travelers at a kind of fault for their failure to recall the appearance of the man standing before them. Nor is it the same thing as saying merely that their eyes did not recognize him, but that their eyes were kept from recognizing him. There's an emphasis here not only on the eyes, but also on something that is preventing them from seeing. But this only begs the question, by what were their eyes kept from recognizing Jesus? It seems to me that there are several reasons that a failed recognition can occur. I'll just name five of them for starters. A failed recognition can be the result of an immediate change, whether deliberate or accidental, in the physical appearance of an individual that we know, as after operations, surgeries, mutilations, accidents, etc. We encounter someone with whom we're familiar, who has undergone a physical transformation of some kind, and we overlook them for their unfamiliar appearance. It can also be the result of a deliberate deception, as when one puts on a disguise with the intent of fooling somebody, for whatever reason. It can also be the result of time passing, so much so that our memories of the one whom we intend to recognize does not at all resemble the person we presently encounter. Time ages and changes bodies physically, but it also affects our memories, which can contribute to the failure. Another potential contributor to failed recognition is preoccupation. We are sometimes so engrossed in thinking about something or looking at something else that we fail to see what is going on or who is standing right in front of us. I'd also like to suggest that the failure to recognize something that ought to be familiar can also be the result of conditioning. Just as Pavlov's dogs could be made to salivate every time they heard a bell ring, so too can you and I be made to overlook, ignore, and otherwise fail to recognize people in our midst who should be familiar to us as our brethren. Now, the failure of these two travelers on this road to Emmaus to recognize Jesus could be the result of any of these aforementioned reasons. According to the story, Jesus has certainly undergone some physical transformation recently. 3 days have passed since his execution. Part of it could be that Jesus just doesn't want to be recognized, as evinced by the fact that he doesn't exactly come out and tell these travelers who he is. It could also be that they don't recognize him because they're so caught up, preoccupied, in the events of the past few days. They can't seem to get over the fact of the crucifixion, and they don't really even stop to wonder who this fellow is or consider who he might be. But it's this last one that I'm interested in the ways that these travelers are and have been conditioned and maybe even are expected to fail to recognize the Christ. Consider that the narrator of this story does not say that Jesus was surprised not to be recognized. Consider also that when he is accused of being the only stranger in Jerusalem who does not know the things that have taken place there, Jesus does not come back by saying, "Actually, I do know what took place there, and I have the scars to prove it." The rebuke of this story is not for the failure of the people to recognize Jesus. Rather, it's for their slowness of heart to believe all that the prophets have declared about Jesus. This is a story about faith in which Jesus challenges the notion that seeing is believing by refusing to allow himself to be seen. From the way he acts with these travelers, it doesn't appear as though he really wants to reveal himself every time he encounters someone who doesn't recognize him. That would require a lot of time and energy on his part, and if you think about it, wouldn't require a lot on anyone else's. I think what this story is trying to explain is that having faith is not easy. It does not mean believing what you have seen, but just the opposite. It means believing what you have not seen. Jesus drops enough hints for these travelers that it's a wonder they don't figure out who he is before he sits down and breaks bread with them. But again, I don't really think the point of this is just to leave these travelers feeling foolish in their unbelief. Where this story ends is with Jesus departing from them, having clarified a few things about the Christ that restores their faith. He does not remove from or cure these travelers of whatever it is that is preventing their eyes from recognizing him. We are only told that their eyes were opened. By the end of the story, we are shown that these travelers have been given a way of seeing with their hearts. And by so doing, by Jesus refraining from performing the miracles that are within his power, allowing these travelers to see him as a stranger and a completely human one at that, Jesus encourages us, the readers of the story and the audience of the good news of the gospel, to understand a beautiful possibility, namely that any stranger we may encounter in our roaming through the world, no matter where, no matter when, could be the Christ. We've been speaking for the past several weeks here at TAB about the physical appearance of Jesus, and we have reached a consensus that Jesus was not white, but black, and we have put up a new painting depicting him as such. This seems like a step in the right direction. In light of the story we've just heard, I'd like to imagine a few other things that Jesus, or the love that he embodies, might not have been, a few other things that he might not be. Allowing for the possibility that our eyes are not always reliable, that belief does not always or necessarily ever follow from seeing, and that we are sometimes kept by any number of things from recognizing what ought to be familiar. There's a chance that when we encounter the love of Christ in the world, he might not even resemble a person of the masculine gender. He might not be able-bodied or handsome. He might not be well-fed or well-clothed. He might not be healthy in any number of ways. He might not be without a mental health diagnosis. He might not have a clean record or access to health care. He might not live where we live, think what we think, believe what we believe. If he came back and saw some of the things that were being said in his name, I would argue that he might not and probably wouldn't even be a Christian. One of the things I like about this story is the way it seems to suggest that our failure to recognize Christ is not a sin deserving of rebuke and reproach, but is actually kind of our default, a sort of reflex reaction. I would argue that when we're forced to loosen our grip on the beliefs that we mistake for knowledge, when our surveillance that is so crucial most of the time is flagged by fatigue, exhaustion, weariness, that's when the imagination gets to breathe its vitalist air. And imagination is necessary for belief. We are so fixated most of the time on not screwing up, on trying to be pure and good, that we begin to allow ourselves to believe that we are. And of course, we know what is right and can be perfect, infallible, if we only try hard enough. But what fools we should be to think so. What this story seems to suggest to us is that in the presence of the love of Christ, we are not going to fool him. He is going to be fooling us. When we see the Christ with our hearts, it probably won't look like whoever it is we're expecting it to look like. If your Christ is white, then you better believe that Jesus was and is black. If your Christ is a man, then you'd better expect to encounter him at some point down the road as a woman. Because the Christ that these people were expecting was dead, and here they encountered him alive and well, convinced that he was just some traveler, a stranger who had drifted into town on the heels of so much happening, who had not yet heard the news. The last thing I want to say about this story is what a remarkable thing it is that after all this time, we still need a story like this. When I was in divinity school, I had a professor who loved to puzzle himself by applying the ethical question of what would Jesus do onto a variety of contemporary issues and dilemmas, only to arrive time and time again at the conclusion that the things that were going on during the life of Christ were on a whole other level and surely would have paled in comparison to the atrocities that we have created for ourselves with our staggering advances in history, science, and technology. But I always thought the real tragedy would be if Jesus came back and realized that nothing at all had changed. So this is a song. It's called Ain't It a Pity. Went down to the chapel last Easter morning. I hadn't been for a while, seemed like a good time. I was counting on hearing a beautiful sermon by the preacher there, who's an old friend of mine. Well, I was a few minutes late and the service was crowded, and an usher escorted me into my seat. As soon as I sat down, the sermon had started, and the next thing that I knew, I had fell fast asleep. And while I was sleeping, while the preacher was preaching, a most peculiar vision visited me. I dreamt that the person sitting on right beside me was none other than Jesus, old Galilee. Well, he put out his hand, he said, "Hey, nice to meet you." There wasn't no halo hanging over his head. He looked old and tired, and he smelled sort of pungent, as you'd imagine a man who just came back from the dead. Well, he wanted to know if I would show him around some and keep him a secret. He didn't want to be seen. I agreed to his terms, and he asked me what the day was. I said, "It's Easter Sunday, 2017. Well, it occurred to me then just what Jesus would be in for, having never set foot inside of our day and age. He'd probably never seen a car or an airplane, or looked at a cell phone, or read a Facebook page. Well, out of the church we two then proceeded, while the preacher in the pulpit was left carrying on. I asked old Jesus what he thought of the sermon. He said he thought it had gone on too long. Well, we stepped outside into the city, where the wind blew a newspaper up to our feet. Jesus picked it up and he started to read it. And the words that he said, he was bound to repeat. He said, ain't it a pity, ain't it a shame, it's been 2,000 years and the world hasn't changed. There's still wars being fought, there's still people in chains, ain't it a pitiful shame. For a while through the slums and the alleys, Jesus took it all in just like he'd seen it before. Helping the sick, feeding the hungry, assisting the needy, the grieving, the poor. Well, we walked until we made it on out to Wall Street, where we stood out just like bums at a rich folks' parade. Jesus pulled on the coattails of a shiny tuxedo and asked the fella who wore it how his money was made. Well, the fella turned red and he told us to get lost. He said, all that's my business and none of your own. He said, if I had a dollar to give every beggar, why, I'd be out of a job and out of a home. Jesus said, ain't it a pity, ain't it a shame, it's been 2,000 years and the world hasn't changed. Sure, your buildings are taller, but your people's the same, ain't it a pitiful shame. Well, while Jesus was talking, this fellow lets out a whistle, and up comes this police officer looking servile and all. He says, what's the trouble here? And the man points right at us, and the officer, he makes us put our hands on the wall. And while he is frisking, Jesus starts talking, says he won't get to heaven by buying your way. When the officer heard that, well, he started to beat him, and he dragged us both to his squad car to haul us away. Down at the courthouse, they questioned and searched us, took prints of our fingers and asked us our names. When I told them mine, they didn't say nothing. When Jesus said his, they called him insane. Jesus said, ain't it a pity, ain't it a shame, it's been 2,000 years and the world hasn't changed. To the people in charge, the truth still sounds insane, ain't it a pitiful shame. Well, we went for a judge who asked us what our crime was, and the officer said we was trying to steal from the rich. He said he'd be doing both of us a favor when he brought down his gavel, said the sentence was death. Jesus said, ain't it a pity, ain't it a shame, it's been 2,000 years and the world hasn't changed. They kill you once, if you come back, they'll kill you again, and ain't it a pitiful shame.